Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. This podcast is for just about everyone in the government acquisition world. Our topic today is teaming, and our sponsor is Deltek GovWin IQ. Let's get started. We had Kevin Lothridge on the podcast a few episodes back, and we talked about his good and bad experiences teaming as a contractor and as a subcontractor.
Yeah, and it's one of those things I didn't know as much about the teaming process as a contracting officer. And so there's a lot of stuff to still cover as far as what makes good teaming work and the impact it has on the contract.
Okay, before we get into talking more about teaming, let's stop and say thanks.
I want to thank House Shopping with My Wife. That's actually his iTunes handle. I'm sure there's a story behind that. He wrote us a 5-star review. He's a small business owner. And he said, the strength of the podcast is that we keep it tight, right? And it says, keeping dialogue contained to singular topics in order to keep too many details from getting in the way of learning. For a newcomer to contracting like myself, too much detail at one time is too much.
We struggle a lot trying to keep these things down to a singular topic and just keep it at the top level. So thank you for that detailed review to help us know what we're doing well and what we're not.
The specificity of this iTunes review is awesome. Thanks for that.
We're talking about teaming today, and Kevin, our definition of teaming is teaming for a government effort is two or more companies joining together to improve their chances of not only winning, but executing on the contract.
Okay, Paul, well, what's the FAR say?
The FAR is a little more specific than you and I, as usual. 9.601 describes contractor team arrangements, and there's two different types that it describes. The first is two or more companies form a partnership or joint venture to act as a potential prime contractor. And the second, which is the more common that we see, is a potential prime contractor agrees with one or more other companies to have them as subcontractors under a specified government contract or acquisition program.
Yeah, so the first one, which is the joint venture, that's more of a formal corporate entity level agreement.
That's way up at the company level. They're saying we're going to work together and we're going to bind our companies together. Or a joint venture is we're actually going to create a separate entity that we're both a part of that is going to pursue this government business.
Yeah, and more often it's the contract level teaming agreement, which is we're going to work together to win this contract. And then at the end of this contract, we're probably going to part ways. Or go chase the other one. But yeah, there's nothing formal.
The second one is still formal, but it's not really a corporate level agreement. It's just we're going to get together for this one effort.
Yeah.
So pre-acquisition, that's bound together by a teaming agreement that says, here's what we're going to do during the proposal phase. And if we win, here's what we think we'll do afterwards, how we'll work together afterwards. After a contract award, that teaming agreement goes away and they're bound together by an actual subcontract agreement that's much more detailed than a teaming agreement. So we're not really talking about vendors here. This is, I'm air quoting again, vendors. I know you can't see that on a podcast, but there's a difference between a subcontractor and a vendor. And what is that difference? Well, I think a lot of companies would say there is no difference. Everyone's a vendor. Everyone's a subcontractor. It's not the prime contractor. It's everyone else. In general terms, a subcontractor has a formal statement of work or some part of the work that is theirs to execute. And a vendor is someone like you're buying piece parts from. But a vendor could be a consultant that just comes in for one specific thing.
Yeah, and you could also define a vendor as somebody who touches all of your contracts versus a teaming partner as someone who helps you on this one. So that's a podcast for another day. The difference between vendor and subcontractor and teaming partner, and we'll save that for another one.
Good point. This is a good place to talk time zones. When does teaming matter in the acquisition and execution time zones? And this is pretty much all across all of the zones. I think it really gets hot and heavy for the industry side during the market research zone and the RFP zone. This is when teams are being put together, but it could be as early as the requirement zone, when the government is first considering how are we going to meet a need. Contractors may be thinking together, you know, years in advance. And if we go to the government now and say, we'll put these two contractors together to form a team, this is the best way to solve your problem.
Yeah, of course, teaming also really impacts the contract during execution time zones. because they're in the performance zone, how well those teaming partners work under the, you mentioned the subcontracting agreement, that impacts how well the contract performs and also leads to the recompete.
And for a very large, a complex acquisition, the recompete zone could last years. If you have a five-year contract where you're providing a service, the government may be starting to think about the follow-on contract a couple years in advance. And industry surely is thinking about the recompete, about the follow-on a couple years in advance. So remember, the acquisition and the execution time zones sort of cross over each other. So when you've reached the recompete zone of the execution time zones, you're already in the requirement zone and the market research zone of the acquisition time zones. And industry is thinking about, okay, we have a team that worked before. What's different about this recompete? What's different about the follow-on contract? What do we need to change? Do we need to get rid of some of our partners? Do we need to bring in different partners? Do we need to maybe team with someone else? Maybe this one is going to a small business set aside and we won't even be able to prime it anymore. So how will we retain some business here?
And let me clarify, that's not just for giant opportunities. We're helping a client with a $5 million proposal right now, which, yeah, if you're a micro-sized business, that's big, but that's not a giant contract. But this process is still playing out. A year before the contract is set to end, it's a service that's recurring. So a year before the contract comes out again, this process is starting. What's the team going to be? How are they going to set the teams up? Does it make sense to do it? All the things you just talked about. So it's not specific to giant contracts. I had contracts that were worth less than $1 million. That this process still happened. It was shorter, it was faster, but it happened. Happens all the time. But let's not get distracted by all the things you could do to find the right teaming partner.
And now a quick break for our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Deltek. Speaking of teaming, Deltek's GovWin IQ lets you do targeted searches through their database of nearly 2 million companies. Here's Deltek's Kevin Plexico to explain more.
What we find is a lot of companies, when they're looking for teaming partners, they're not really systematic about it. They're more opportunistic about it. So what we've done is assemble the database. It's basically every company that's registered in SAM.gov. We've combined that data with all of the FPDS, the contract reporting data, the subcontract award data, our own data that we collect, as well as the data we have on the state, local, and education side, to put together kind of a single profile for a company. And that company database can be searched by keyword for companies with certain capabilities, certain socioeconomic status. And then through GovWin, we have a social network called the GovWin Network that they can then use to not only find the companies, but then a point of contact that they could connect with to accelerate the time it takes to find pre-qualified teaming partners for them to build a team.
Deltek's GovWin IQ is the essential source for information, teaming, and software solutions to help organizations find, manage, and win government business. Okay, back to our conversation about teaming. Let's talk about why teaming can be so important. It's important because you can win or lose just with your teaming. You can win or lose at the teaming game and not even get to the contract award piece of it.
Teams form for lots of different reasons. It could be something to do technically with your performance of the contract, and it could also be just because of the small business rules.
If you're a large business prime, you may need to bring on small business teaming partners in order to meet the small business goals that are set up out by the RFP, by the acquisition that you're trying to win. Or you may need to hire subcontractors to fill strategic gaps, places where you may not have all the expertise, where you may not have the depth of personnel to be able to do the work that needs to be done there. You may bring in a subcontractor just to fill a niche part of the job for you.
And if you're a small business, it may be the only way or one of the best ways for you to win work. You can get on a contract that already exists as opposed to having to help slog through the proposal process to win your first contract.
There are a lot of small businesses that don't have any prime contracts. They don't want to take the time and the resources required to win a large prime contract, but they're perfectly happy to play a supporting role and join with a large prime and win a lot of work. But that's why I say you can win or lose at the teaming game. If you're a small business, you better latch on to the right prime.
Yeah, and some of our customers come to us when they're transitioning from subcontract to wanting to go after prime work. It's a different mindset. You're taking on new things. More importantly, you have new gaps to fill. So understanding the difference between these two, what part you play in the overall team, like you said, you could win or lose the opportunity if you don't understand where you fit in that puzzle. one of our customers actually posted a question about teaming in the Ask a Contracting Officer forum. And between several of our former COs, we came up with this big list of items, about 24 items.
So what was on the list?
Well, things like, are you aligned with what that company does? Are they targeting the opportunity, or did they just find it on FBO and they're like, hey, I need a body that can do this?
Yeah, good to know whether they actually have a chance to win.
Yeah, do they have the capability to actually win this? Are they just bringing in, I need five people that can do cybersecurity. You're alphabetically, you were first, which means that you're going to be fighting for work afterwards. What's the reputation of the company? What do you know about them? What do you know? How can you look at the data that they've won? What performance have they had?
Yeah, you kind of don't want to board a sinking ship.
There you go.
You shouldn't just join a team. Hey, I think they could win. Maybe I heard they told me they could win, so I'm going to jump on their team.
It must be true. That's right.
Right. Think about who else is competing for this, and could they use you as well?
Yeah, there's so many pieces to this.
So many pieces that we don't have time to get into on one podcast.
There you go. Keep going. Thanks for keeping us focused.
So let's get specific about why the government cares about the teaming.
You want the mission to get done. I mean, that's the purpose of a contract, is take the requirement that somebody has and fulfill it, right?
Right. It's not a contract for the sake of a contract. It's a contract to deliver something for the U.S. taxpayers.
And it may take a team to do that from a technical performance perspective. You want the mission to get done, but you also want the small business goals to be met.
And that's something that it's not in the CO's power. This is the small business office that usually doles out these goals that you have to meet. And the whole small business set aside thing, it's a perversion of capitalism as we like it here in America, right? Because it's not the optimal solution all the time. We as a country have decided that supporting small businesses is good, and I think that's true, right? We have created a way to give small businesses a lift to allow them to compete. But by requiring small businesses to be a part of a large business's proposal and solution and execution of a contract, we're adding complexity and cost to the overall effort. Because every sub that you add, someone has to do that work to bring them on with a subcontract. Someone has to monitor their performance. Someone has to pay their bills. That costs money. It takes time. And it takes control directly out of one contractor's hands. So now you have to rely on, could be many subcontractors to do their part of the job. So from the government side, you may not care about that. That's the prime contractor's job to manage all that. But you have to understand that in a perfect world, industry would decide on their own when they need to add subcontractors and when they don't. And small business set-asides create some inefficiencies, add complexity, and add cost to your program. But on purpose, for good reasons.
And back to the technical side, if it's a complex requirement, is it feasible that one company can do it? And you may not know that. And so you may bring in these small businesses or just other businesses. They may be other large businesses. They may all be small. I mean, there's a whole strategy behind that. But how diverse the contract requirement is going to drive how many teaming partners you have potentially. And then who those teaming partners are, like you said, is probably going to be driven to some extent by the small business goals. As a CO, I wish I'd asked more about teaming, because it was kind of transparent to me. I had a lot of contracts. I had one in particular that when they showed up to perform, they had a couple of companies supporting them who were very good at that piece of the contract that I'd never met before. I mean, I'd read about their names in the proposal, obviously, but I didn't actually meet them. I didn't meet the people. I didn't really know them as well as I saw them performing. And I realized, wow, that's why they team with this company, because they're the best at this piece, because it was for training services. And so having an integrator was the best acquisition strategy for us. We would have learned that sooner if we'd have made that part of our industry day communication or part of our RFIs and say, is this something that one company can do? Or is this requirement we've documented something that's going to take a team? Ask that question and see what industry says. And yes, you're probably going to get the one large business says, we can do it all. Yeah, I get that. But I mean, you're also going to get, varying opinions. And you can make that decision based on primary research. We did a podcast about market research versus just guessing.
Now for the industry side, why does industry care about teaming? Well, part of it is how do you win, right? What's the correct team that when presented in a proposal will cause the government to select you to do the work? So the first half of it is assembling the team that sounds like they can do the job well and meets all the goals. If you don't meet all of the small business goals laid out in an RFP, you won't even be considered for award. You don't even get a chance to perform because you're out on a technicality.
And that goes back to the 80-20 rule, which is podcast episode number 2, where that's the process. 80% process and 20% relationship. Is that
right.
if you didn't have those ratios of small businesses right, the process says, I can't give you a contract, regardless of how awesome your technical solution may be.
Yeah, but even if the government wants you, even if you've built some relationships there, you can't win. So pre-award, industry cares about teaming because they want to present the proper structure and abilities in subcontractors that let you win. More importantly, after award, you want to have the right team so you can execute as you planned. It doesn't do any good to write a great proposal and say, we have all of these subcontractors in there, if they don't actually help you execute the work and meet the mission, right? And after award, no matter what you said pre-award, after award, you still have to meet those goals. You can't just in the proposal say, yes, we've planned for this women-owned small business to do 4% of the work, just like you said. After award, the government tracks these things. And a women-owned small business actually has to do 4% of the work. It doesn't have to be that one, and it doesn't have to be the exact work that you thought they were going to do, but you're still responsible for meeting those goals after award. And we talked about this before. If you're a small business, you may need to be on a team just to win. So if you look for those larger competitions that have small business requirements, you may be able to approach one of the primes who's struggling to find a service-disabled veteran, women-owned small business to fill a role. Find things that you can do, but maybe not at scale. You might be able to walk right into a competition on a winning team, or you may be able to join a contract in progress that's struggling to meet its small business goals. So it's important to understand, as a small business, where you fit in this teaming world.
And a caveat to that is make sure that you're targeting first. If you just walk up to any of the large businesses and say, hey, I'm a HubZone contractor. Okay, what do you do?
Right.
You should have targeted the opportunity. Like you just said, find a contract they already have. It's something that you already do. Then your trump card is, yeah, we also are a HubZone, or we also are a specific type of socioeconomic. So don't lead with the socioeconomic. I say that because I've had people ask me that. I had a client recently, we were walking through the process of, here is your opportunity to go approach this company and say, hey, we can help you on this contract. That is a compelling story, as opposed to, hey, I'm just looking for work. Yeah, everybody is.
Is it raining there?
Yes. It's Florida. It's, of course, it's always raining in the summer. So,
I can hear the rain in the background or the wind or something. Good luck. It's batting down the hatches.
It's a typical storm. It'll blow through like the world is ending for about 5 minutes and then we'll move on. Got to keep the aquifers full down here, right?
Yeah. So before you blow away, let's wrap this thing up.
You can win or lose based on your teaming choices. So here we are with targeting yet again. Target your teaming partners based on the capabilities plus the goals.
The goals in the contract. The small business subcontracting goals is what you're talking about.
Exactly. Teaming could be, or I would say it is, it's a key part of whether the contract is successful. Separate from the contract performance, because we talked about under the 80-20 rule, if you haven't put the right team together to meet the specific requirements of the RFP, you're not going to go very far. If it's an 8A set aside and you're not an 8A, you're not even eligible.
You're not going to win. You're not even going to be considered.
Yeah, we're going to roll our eyes at you when you send a proposal in. But on top of that, understand that there's the contract performance side. And marrying, so in other words, let's pick a real example. For IT security. IT security is a huge bucket, right? Well, the large business may be able to manage the overall network, but they want somebody who specializes in emerging technologies, which one of our customers we're going to be profiling actually does. For him to come to the table and say, hey, this opportunity, here's the part I can help with. That's a technical solution. The fact that he's a small business who's also a veteran, that's a bonus, right? But you got to do both. And managing the both, that's the part of teaming that makes it really work.
I don't think I have anything else to add to that. I'll talk to you later, Kevin.
See you, Paul.
Okay, that's it for this episode. If you enjoy the Contracting Officer podcast, please help us spread the word by telling a friend. If you don't, send me a note at paul@contractingofficerpodcast.com and let me know what we can do to make it more valuable to you. Thanks for joining us today.